Ecclesiastes 7, verses 13 through 29. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, and then in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. In my vain life, I have seen everything. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not overly righteous, and do not make yourself too wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you should take hold of this, and from that withhold not your hand, for the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Wisdom gives strength to the wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others. All this I have tested by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. That which has been is cut off and deep, very deep. Who can find it out? I turned my heart to know and to search out and to seek wisdom and the scheme of things and to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness that is madness. And I find something more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets and whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is taken by her. Behold, this is what I found, says the preacher, while adding one thing to another to find the scheme of things, which my soul has sought repeatedly, but I have not found. One man among 1,000 I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. See, this alone I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes.
How many of you remember where you were 29 years ago today? How many of you were even alive 29 years ago today? Raise your hand. Wow, unbelievable. I remember exactly where I was 29 years ago today. I married this beautiful young lady right down here. Happy anniversary. Before we got married, though, and pretty much immediately after we got engaged, I knew that I was way in over my head. And I knew that I halfway knew what I was getting myself into in marriage and being a husband, but I also knew I didn't know what I was doing and had no earthly idea what I was getting myself into at the same time. And so I made a list of 10 of the most godliest husbands that I knew. And I reached out to them and I asked them if we could meet. And the purpose of meeting with them is I had kind of a list of questions that I just wanted to ask them. That I wanted to ask them about marriage, that I wanted to ask them about being a husband, that I wanted to ask them about the first year of marriage and the challenges there, and wanted to ask them about what it looks like to spiritually lead in marriage and how to communicate well in marriage and how to deal with conflict in marriage, and I just all these questions. Just wanted to pepper them with one after another to just gain their wisdom and seek their wisdom and learn from these men who were ahead of me when it came to being a husband and marriage, that I'd never really traveled down that road yet at that point in time. And so just wanted to gain and glean their wisdom, and I desperately needed it. In a small way, that's kind of what the book of Ecclesiastes is all about and like. That Solomon has lived a long, hard life. So it's near the end of his life in some level. It's near that, not the beginning, but near the end of his life. And so he's gone through a lot. He's gone through a lot of life. He's seen, he's observed, he's personally experienced a whole lot of things in this fallen, broken world under the sun. He's seen, observed, experienced a lot of good. He's seen, observed, and experienced a lot of bad. He's seen, observed, and experienced a lot of ugly and everything else. And now in this book, this is Solomon, like looking back on his life and looking back on all that he's experienced and seen, observed in this twisted and fallen and crooked and broken world that's just like a breath and a vapor that's hard to make sense of. It's this mysterious, enigmatic, complex, perplexing world and life. And he's writing down for us the things that he's learned, the wisdom that he's gained, the wisdom that he's learned as he's navigated through this life, and he's writing this down so that we can learn from him and so that we don't make the same mistakes he did, but that we can gain and learn from the wisdom that he learned along the way as he navigated through this fallen, broken world under the sun in which he lived and in which we live. And that's what we've seen. That's what the whole book of Ecclesiastes is really all about. And that's what Solomon is going to continue to share with us here in our passage here this morning. That in verses 13 through 29, what Solomon is going to do is he's going to give us five specific words or five specific pieces of wisdom that he learned, that he observed, that he experienced as he walked through this life and as he navigated through his life under the sun. And so if you have a handout and you look at the very top, it probably says four words. Well, I made a change last night. And so you might want to write five words of wisdom as we navigate through this life under the sun. And then if you look at the very, very bottom, the fourth main point, so bullet point, where it says seek wisdom, but remember the fool, you might want to cross all that out. And instead, the two sub-points underneath that last point, you can make those the two main points. And that equals five. Everybody with me? And I'm going to reword those two sub-points at the very end when we get there. All right. Here's the first piece of wisdom then. Solomon's looking back on his life, trying to give us wisdom as we live through this fallen, broken world under the sun. And here's what he wants to teach us. His first word of wisdom to us, it's this. It's to humbly accept that all your days, whether they're good days or bad days, all of them come from the sovereign hand of God. So this is the first piece of wisdom Solomon gives us in verse 13 and 14 here. If you look at verse, or if you have a ESV translation, like I'm preaching from, you'll notice that verse 13 here is included with verses 1 through 12 to form one section. Other translations include verse 13, though, with verse 14 and what comes after it. And I think that would probably make more sense. The verse 13 probably fits better with verse 14 than with verses 1 through 12, like the ESV has broken it up. And we'll see why here in just a moment. But look at how Solomon begins here in verse 13. He begins with this exhortation and this question. He says, consider the work of God. Then he asks this question, who can make straight what he has made crooked? So it's important to realize here that when Solomon uses the word crooked here, he's not using it in a moral sense. As if he's saying God's crooked, like a bank robber is crooked. It's not what he's saying here. Instead, he's using the word crooked here in a providential sense. He's using it to describe what God providentially ordains, what God providentially decrees in this life under the sun and in our own individual lives as well. And what he's saying is that God providentially ordains, what he ordains isn't always straight, meaning it's not always easy. It doesn't always make sense. Instead, sometimes when God providentially ordains things, it's crooked, it's bent, it's hard, it's difficult, it's hard to grasp and make sense of. Like when you lose your job out of nowhere, when you get a scary health diagnosis, When you have a rebellious child that you don't know what to do with. When you face relational problems or relational conflict, or when you're unjustly treated and mistreated by others, when someone you love dies, or whatever else, that in those moments, those are the crooked things in our life that God makes, that He providentially ordains in this fallen, broken world, this crooked world under the sun. And what Solomon is saying here in verse 13 is that when God providentially ordains something, we can't make it straight. We can't make it uncrooked. We can't make it straight in our own strength and in our own ability. We can't make straight what God has made crooked. He's ordained it. It's done. It's fixed. We can't change it and fix it. Make it straight. And since that's true, then, look at how Solomon, in verse 14, tells us how we ought to respond in light of that reality. He says in verse 14, in the day of prosperity, then, be joyful. And think about that. That makes sense, right? Especially what we saw in verse 13. If God makes things crooked, then if He ever, in His kindness and in His grace, grants you a day of prosperity, and that word prosperity simply means good or pleasant or happy. If He ever grants you, in His kindness and grace, a day that's good, a day that's happy, a day that's pleasant, then you should rejoice. You should be joyful, meaning you should see that day as a gift from God. You shouldn't take that day for granted as if you earned it or deserve it or entitled to it. You shouldn't minimize the significance of it, because He could have made that day crooked, but He didn't. Instead, He made it good, He made it happy, He made it pleasant. And as a result, we should rejoice and be joyful and thank Him for it and praise Him for it. Then he goes on to verse 14. And says, in the day of adversity, consider, God has made the one as well as the other. Meaning God has made both days. He's made the day of prosperity in which everything goes right and everything's hunky-dory and everything's good and pleasant. But He's also made the day of adversity in which everything goes wrong and everything's hard. And everything's challenging and difficult. Like, both of those days come from God. Like, He providentially ordained, decreed, made both of them for you. Both the good days and the bad days. And so then, if you're in a season, like right in this very moment, that's a season or a day of adversity, then what Solomon is saying here is really, really important for you to remember. Like, in no way is Solomon here trying to minimize the pain or the adversity or the hardship of the day that you're in, season of adversity that you're walking through right now. At the same time, what he's trying to do is give you wisdom for how you should think about the day of adversity that you're in, and how you should view the adversity that you're walking through right now. And the specific wisdom that he's trying to give to you is this. It's that no matter how hard and difficult your life might be right now, it's not an accident. Like, your life is not spinning out of control. It's in control. Not your control, but God's control. Like, what you're going through right now didn't just randomly happen. Instead, God, in His wisdom and according to His sovereign plan and purposes, providentially ordained this day and season of adversity for you, for reasons and purposes that you may know, may not ever fully know and fully understand. That's the wisdom that Solomon wants us to understand. Both days come from Him. The day of prosperity, and if that day comes, be joyful, because you're not entitled to it. But if the day of adversity comes, realize that that's what God in his great providential plan and purposes, it's what he made and created and designed for you right now. Why? I have no idea. But he knows, and you can trust him. At the end of verse 14, though, Solomon is going to give just a little glimpse into one of the purposes for why God has made both good days and bad days, days of prosperity and days of adversity. What's his purpose in creating those days? Well, he tells us one little reason and purpose at the end of verse 14. Look there, he says, so here's purpose, man may not find out anything that will be after him. You see what he's saying here? Meaning if God is the one who ultimately determines what day we're in, then you and I have no earthly idea what day is coming next. Because we don't get to determine it. We don't get to choose it. We're clueless. Like you and I have no earthly idea if tomorrow is going to be a day of adversity or if tomorrow is going to be a day of prosperity. Because we don't get to dictate and determine what day it's going to be. Only God does. And again, that's the wisdom that Solomon's trying to teach us here. It's that we don't control our lives. We don't control our future. We don't get to determine what day tomorrow is going to be, whether it's going to be a day of calamity or whether it's going to be a day of prosperity. We're clueless in regards to what day it's going to be tomorrow. But at the same time, what he's teaching us in these verses is whatever day it is, whatever day comes tomorrow, we do know the one who made that day and ordained that day and providentially decreed that day for our lives. And since we know him, we know that he's good and we know that he's kind and we know that he's wise and loving and sovereign and knows what's best, even when we have no clue and can hardly understand what in the world is going on, why he's doing what he's doing. And so as a result, we can humbly accept whatever day he brings to us, and we can trust him. So that's the first word of wisdom Solomon wants us to understand and grasp as we live life in this fallen, broken, cursed world under the sun. The next word of wisdom then that he gives us then is this. You see it on your handout. It's to remember that your righteousness or lack thereof doesn't guarantee God's blessings. Your righteousness or lack thereof doesn't guarantee God's blessings. This is what Solomon is going to go on to say next in verse 15 through 18. Look at verse 15. He writes, in my vain life, or in my mist-like life, in my breath-like life, I have seen everything. Then he tells us one of the things that he's seen. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. What he's saying here is that Solomon has seen good, godly, righteous people die young. And he's seen evil, wicked, God-hating people live a long, prosperous life. And there's wisdom here. There's wisdom that Solomon is trying to teach us by that observation of what he saw and observed in this life under the sun. And the wisdom that he wants us to understand is this. It's that there is not always a one-to-one correspondence between how we live and God's favorable blessings in this life. In other words, living a righteous life doesn't guarantee a life of blessing and prosperity in this life. In other words, just look at Job. Look at Paul. Look at Jesus. Like, that's not how God works. It's not this vending machine God. You just put righteousness, your righteousness, in the little coin holder, And out pops blessings and prosperity and long prosperous life here on this earth. That's not how God works. This isn't the prosperity gospel 2.0. But the reality is, even though we might not buy into the prosperity gospel hook, line, and sinker, it's easy for it to begin to filter into our lives in practical ways. Like, it's easy to fall into this trap. If I just live a holy, righteous life, then God's going to bless me. Like, you see it, like, when in difficult circumstances you might be going through in your life. Like, it's easy to think in those times, God, look at all I've done. I've been reading my Bible. I've been going to church. I've been giving money to people. I've been living in purity. I've been serving people. I've been obeying your word. I've been confessing sin. What did I do to deserve this? There's not always a one-to-one correspondence between what you did and what's happening to you. There's just not. I remember in high school playing basketball. Anytime we had a game, I remember like days leading up to that game. It's the most holy I'll ever lived. I mean, I read my Bible, I obeyed, I prayed, I confessed every sin I ever committed in my life. Like, holy, holy living. Like, nobody's business. Why? Because I thought, if I lived a holy, holy, holy life, then God will bless me by letting me score 20 points in the basketball game. Unfortunately, that never happened. 18 one time. It's as high as I got. That's not how God works. He just doesn't. And since that isn't how he works, then look at the two extremes then that Solomon is going to warn us against and tell us to avoid. We see the first one in verse 16. He says, be not overly righteous and do not make yourself too wise. And so this is the first temptation we might feel here. Like, if we see someone that's righteous, and they die young, they don't enjoy the blessings of God, even though they lived a righteous life, then as a result, we could think to ourselves, well, maybe they weren't righteous enough. Maybe if they were just more righteous, then they wouldn't have died so young. Maybe if they were just more holy, then God would have blessed them with a long, prosperous life. And so then you double down on your righteousness. You double down on living wisely. And you go on this mad pursuit to be overly righteous and excessively righteous in hopes that God will see your excessive righteousness and all the righteousness that you're adding up one on top of another. And he sees, he's righteous, so I'll bless him with a long life filled with prosperity and blessings. That's what I thought playing basketball. But in response to this sort of thinking, look at the question Solomon asks in verse 16 at the end there. He asks, why should you destroy yourself? That word destroy can also be translated as the word astonished or the word appalled, which would be the outcome, the result, if you seek to double down on your righteousness in order to gain the blessings of God. You're going to be astonished. You're going to be appalled that it doesn't work that way. But that's not the only extreme that Solomon warns us against. Look at verse 17. We see the second extreme he warns us against. He says, be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. And so then some might think, okay then, if there's not a one-to-one correlation between our righteousness and God's blessings, then why try and be righteous? Just indulge in sin then. Be excessively wicked then. Give yourself to all sorts of wickedness and evil and sin, and eat, drink, and be merry, because it has no bearing whatsoever on the length and the quality of your life here on this earth. Indulge in sin. Be excessively wicked. And Solomon is saying, don't do that either. Instead, he asks this question at the end of verse 17. Look there. He asks, why should you die before your time? In other words, this isn't an ironclad promise like we saw in verse 15, but generally speaking, what Solomon's getting at here is that those who live overly excessive, wicked, and evil lives don't live long. Generally speaking. Like if you go around murdering people and physically abusing people and robbing banks and homes and businesses and you beat up people all the time and you're overly evil and wicked, then you're probably not going to live that long. Right? That's just common sense. That's not an ironclad promise, but generally speaking. So those are the two extremes, right, that Solomon is warning against here, and how we're not to respond to the fact that our righteousness doesn't guarantee a long, prosperous life and God's blessing in our lives. Those are the two extremes. Don't do that. Which then begs the question, how should we respond then? Well, that's what he tells us in verse 18. Look there. He says, it is good that you should take hold of this, meaning the wisdom he just gave in verse 16 and 17. And from that, withhold not your hand. Here it comes. For the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Kind of be hard to follow what Solomon is saying here, but his simple point that he's making here is this. It's to take hold of, listen to the wisdom that he just gave in verse 16 and verse 17. In other words, since our righteousness doesn't guarantee a long, prosperous life and blessings, we shouldn't go to this extreme then and double down on our righteousness and be overly righteous in order to secure God's blessings. And we shouldn't go to this extreme and indulge in sin and be excessively wicked and overly wicked. Instead, the proper response is that we should simply fear God. Meaning we shouldn't live a righteous life and pursue righteousness so that God will bless us with a long, prosperous life and blessings. Instead, we should live a righteous life for one reason, because we fear God, because we love God, because we revere God, because we worship God, because we trust God, because we want to follow God. And we also shouldn't indulge in sin and be overly wicked, since God's blessings, as we saw, aren't contingent upon our righteousness. But instead, again, we should fear God and love God and worship God and obey God. Again, that's the wisdom that Solomon is trying to teach us here. Which then leads us to the third word or piece of wisdom Solomon gives us to have it navigate life here under the sun. And the third piece of wisdom is this. See it on your hand out there. It's to not take to heart when others badmouth you, because you know that we all sin, including yourself. So this is what Solomon is going to go on to say in verse 19 through 22 here. Look at verse 19. He says, wisdom gives strength to the wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. What that means is that wisdom is really, really powerful. You've heard it before, knowledge is power. Well, godly wisdom is power. Godly wisdom is super duper powerful. If you have godly wisdom, you're powerful. But even though you're powerful, look at the qualification that Solomon gives in the very next verse, in verse 20 here. He says, surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. In other words, this is Solomon's version of Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. It's Solomon's version of Romans 3:10, none is righteous, no, not one. So then, yes, verse 19 is true. Someone with godly wisdom is powerful. At the same time, verse 20 is true. They're not perfect. That no matter how wise you are, you still sin. There's not a person who does good 100% of the time and never sins. Even those who are wise act foolishly at times. Even those who are wise make foolish decisions at times. In the next two verses, in verse 21 and 22, Solomon gives one prime example of how we all sin. We all sin in our speech. We all sin with our mouth and with our tongue. That's the point of what Solomon goes on to say in verse 21 and 22. Look at verse 21 with me.
He writes, "Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others." So this is one specific way that we can all relate to. This is one specific way in which we all sin. We all sin in how we talk about other people. That's what Solomon's getting at here. That's what Solomon means in verse 21 and 22 when he uses this word cursed or the word cursing. That word here means to talk about someone as if they're small or a lightweight. To talk about someone as if they don't matter. To talk about someone as if they're inconsequential, unimportant, insignificant, of little to no account. Like they really don't matter. So you badmouth them. You slander them. You gossip about them. You complain about them. You're overly harsh toward them. You treat them and talk about them as if they have little to no value, as if they're not really worth anything, as if they're kind of like a piece of trash. Doesn't matter what you do to a piece of trash. You can walk on it. You can step on it. You can rip it to shreds. It's a piece of trash. It has no value. It's insignificant. Do you talk about others that way? Do you treat others that way by how you talk about them? Whether that be to their face or behind their back to others? Solomon says, this is true of all of us. All of us. And in those moments, though, Solomon is giving us two words of wisdom or two truths to remember when someone badmouths you, like I just described. And the first truth to remember is verse 20. It's that we're all sinners. Like we all stumble in what we say, James 3. So when someone badmouths you, that disrespects you with their speech, treats you like you're have little to no worth and value, then in verse 21, he's saying, don't take it to heart. Don't internalize it too much. Don't be overly sensitive about it. Why? Because of verse 20, because we all sin. We're all sinners. We all sin with our speech and say things we shouldn't say, and that's not good, but the reality is that's just the reality of the world in which we live under the sun. Now, that doesn't justify what was said about you. It doesn't minimize what was said about you. And it sure doesn't mean that you don't confront the person and talk to the person about what they said about you and have a conversation with them about it. But it does mean that we shouldn't, again, verse 21, take it to heart. Internalize it in an unhealthy way. Be overly sensitive to it. Because we know that we're all sinners. We all stumble in what we say. But that's not all. Secondly, when someone badmouths you, the second way he tells us to remember is in verse 22. He says, your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others. In other words, what that person did to you, you've done the same thing to other people. I've done the same thing to other people. Again, that doesn't make what they did right or doesn't minimize what they did and what they said and all that sort of stuff. But we've spoken about others the same way that others have spoken about us. And so then before you get overly upset and mad and angry because of how others have badmouthed you, this is the wisdom of God here to remember in those moments so that we can know the right way to respond and so that we don't respond the way that they responded to us. Fourth word of wisdom Solomon gives us then as we navigate through this life under the sun. Fourth word of wisdom is this, and this is at the very bottom of your handout, those two subpoints, remember those? Thumbs up. Everybody with me? Okay. It's this, and I've kind of reworded it. Beware of the seductive woman. Beware of the seductive woman. This is what we see in verse 23 through 26. Look at verse 23 with me. He says, Solomon writes, all this I have tested by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. That which has been is far off and deep, very deep. Who can find it out? So what he's saying here is that in verse 23, Solomon's saying that he determined to be wise. The only problem is in verse 24, he says that wisdom is far off from him. It's deep. It's very, very deep for him. So it's impossible then for anyone to find it. So when he says that, that doesn't mean that it's impossible for Solomon or any of us to find any wisdom at all. Instead, as we know, Solomon did find wisdom. We find wisdom. The Bible is filled with wisdom. But it does mean what this means here in verse 24 is that it means that it's impossible for any human being to attain full, complete, comprehensive, exhaustive wisdom in this life. God-like wisdom. It's too far, it's too deep for us to be able to find and attain. In verse 25 then, Solomon writes about his quest though, and his pursuit of trying to attain this complete and total wisdom. Look at verse 25. He says, I turn my heart to know and to search out and to seek wisdom and the scheme of things and to know the wickedness of folly and the foolishness that is madness. In other words, what Solomon is saying here is that in his pursuit of total and complete and comprehensive wisdom, he set out to explore and experience and to know everything in this life under the sun. He sought out to find wisdom. He sought out to find the scheme of things. The word scheme here can be used in a positive or a negative sense. And here in verse 25, it's used in a positive sense to mean that he sought to understand the reason, the understanding, the explanation of everything that happens in this life under the sun and how things operate and all those things. He even says in verse 25, in his quest for complete wisdom, that he sought to know wickedness, the wickedness of folly, and the foolishness that is madness. Like he sought out everything, the good, the bad, the ugly, righteousness, sin, wisdom, folly. Like he experienced and dabbled and saw and observed it all. Because he was on the pursuit of total, complete, comprehensive wisdom of this world under the sun. And in verse 26 then, he gives one specific example of the wicked folly and the madness that he found and that he personally experienced. Look at verse 26. He says, and I find something more bitter than death. The woman whose heart is snares and nets and whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God escapes her, but the sinner is taken by her. The woman that Solomon is referring to here is described almost exactly like the adulterous woman or the forbidden woman in Proverbs chapter 5 and Proverbs chapter 7. That her heart, if you notice here in verse 26, is snares and nets, meaning her heart seeks to ensnare. It seeks to trap. It seeks to entice and allure men to herself. Her hands are like fetters, meaning handcuffs, chains, meaning once she traps somebody and entices and seduces somebody to herself, then she doesn't let them go. She holds him in bondage and in captivities. He's trapped, he's enslaved, he's in bondage. He can't get away from her and escape. But Solomon here says that the man, though, who pleases God, escapes her, meaning he doesn't fall into her trap. He isn't enticed by her. He isn't taken by her. He's wise. He knows that it's just a trap. But he says that the sinner, like himself, is taken by her and fooled and deceived by her. And so, men, this is the wisdom Solomon wants us to understand. Solomon wants us to learn from his mistake. He wants us to beware of the seductive woman. Whether she be on a screen, whether she be at your workplace, whether she be at your imagination as you're driving down the road or anywhere else. Don't be fooled. She might look really, really good on the outside. She might look really, really enticing, but she's not what she seems. She's a trap. She's a net. She wants to ensnare you and hold you captive and in bondage and enslave you and never, ever let you go. And Solomon here says that she's more bitter than death. She's worse than death. And so don't be fooled by her. Don't be wise. Don't be fooled by her. Don't be taken by her. Don't fall for her trap. Flee from her. Which then leads to the fifth and final word of wisdom we can learn from Solomon here. And the final word is this. Again, it's the final sub-point, which is the fifth main point. I've rewritten it a little bit. It's to realize why upright men and women are hard to find. Realize why upright men and women are hard to find. That's how Solomon's going to conclude here in verse 27 through 29. That in these verses, he's going to go on to share more of the wisdom he found in his pursuit of total, complete wisdom. In verse 27, look there, he writes, "Behold, this is what I found." Meaning this is the wisdom that he found and learned, says the preacher, "while adding one thing to another to find the scheme of things." And again, that word scheme means a reason or understanding or explanation for everything that is going on in this life under the sun. Verse 28, "which my soul has sought repeatedly, but I have not found." But then at the very end of verse 28, he's going to tell us what he did find. "One man among a thousand I found, but a woman among all these I have not found. See, this alone I found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes." There are a plethora of interpretations and different views when it comes to those verses 28 and 29 here. I don't have time to get into it. I'm just going to give you mine. So what in the world does all of that mean, particularly the end of verse 28? Well, in all likelihood, what Solomon is doing when he's talking about one man among a thousand I found, but a woman among these I have not found, in all likelihood, I believe Solomon is talking about his own personal experience, just like he's been talking about in the previous verses. He's found one man among a thousand, meaning a whole lot. Just one, he found one man. In all likelihood, the man that he's talking about is the man that's being referred to in verse 29 is the upright man. That of all the thousands of men out there, he found one upright man, as he's going to talk about in the next verse in verse 29. But he didn't find an upright woman. Which, if you think about who's writing this, Solomon, which makes sense, right? Who were all the women that he knew? He was married to 700 of them. Then he had 300 concubines. And they were all a bunch of idolaters and immoral women who led him into immorality and idolatry and everything else. And so then of the 1,000 women in his harem, none of them, he couldn't find one that was upright. And the point of all this is the wisdom then that Solomon wants to teach us here. Namely that an upright man, an upright woman who fears the Lord, who loves the Lord, who seeks to please the Lord, who isn't enticed and seduced by the seductive woman, that person is really, 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 really hard to find. Which then begs the question, why? Why is it so rare for there to be an upright man or an upright man and upright woman who loves the Lord and who loves Jesus? Why is that so rare? Like, is it God's fault? Is there something defective in how God created man? Is that the reason why upright men and women are so rare? Is he the one to blame? Well, that's the question that Solomon goes on to answer in verse 29. Look at verse 21. Solomon writes, "See, this alone I have found, that God made man." And the man here is specifically, it's a reference to mankind, not just the gender man, but mankind, men and women. He made man, mankind, here it comes, upright. It's a reference to Genesis 1 and 2 in the garden that God created man and woman, perfect, upright, righteous. But in the rest of verse 29, he says, but they, talking about the man and woman, Adam and Eve, that he created in the garden, and all their progeny, like everybody after them, all of us, have sought out many schemes. The word schemes here is probably used in a negative sense here now, meaning sinister schemes, sinful schemes of rebellion against God, planning and plotting rebellion against the Lord. Which means then, it's not God's fault that there are so few upright men and women. It's man's fault. God made man upright, but man has sought out many schemes of rebellion against God and sinned against him. And this is the wisdom then that Solomon wants us to know when it comes to what's wrong with the world and why are there so few Christians in the world and so few upright men and women in the world. Well, guess what? It's not God's fault. It's our fault because of our rebellion and sin and schemes against the Lord. And so then, let's put all this together. These are the five words of wisdom Solomon is teaching here to help us navigate through this life, this fallen, broken world under the sun. And I don't know about you, but this is wisdom we all need. We all need. This world is enticing. It's hard. It's perplexing. It's mysterious. It's confounding. It's like a breath. We can't grasp it and control it and fully make sense of it and all those things. Like, we desperately need wisdom as we navigate through. Just like I needed wisdom to figure out marriage and entering into marriage, we need wisdom as we live through this fallen, broken world under the sun. Because you and I know that the reality is this. None of us, no one in this room, have perfectly lived out and lived according to the five words of wisdom that we've seen this morning. None of us. There's not one in this room that has. We all have sinned. But the good news is this. It's that Jesus has. He has perfectly lived out all five words of wisdom that Solomon has given us in this chapter this morning. That unlike us, Jesus is the perfect embodiment of all five words of wisdom we've seen in this passage. Just think about it. When his day of adversity came, he didn't kick and scream against God. Instead, he knew that day had been appointed to him by his Father. So he humbly accepted it and prayed, Father, not my will, but your will be done. And not only that, if there's anyone who proves that our righteousness doesn't guarantee a long, prosperous life, it's Jesus. He was the most righteous person who ever lived, and he didn't live a long, prosperous life. Instead, he was crucified in his early 30s. And not only that, but who do you know that was bad-mouthed worse than Jesus? Nobody. Like, he was perfectly righteous. He never did anything wrong. And therefore, he didn't have anything to be bad-mouthed for. But he was. And when he was, how did he respond? He didn't take it to heart. He didn't even say a word. Instead, he entrusted himself to his Father. And not only that, when he was tested and tempted in the flesh, he was never enticed and lured to give in to the seductive woman. Instead, he's the only one who lived a perfectly upright and righteous life. Never once scheming, never once plotting, never once rebelling against his Father, but obeying him perfectly and completely. And so then, if you're a Christian here this morning, if you've repented of your sins and trusted in Jesus and his work on the cross and his resurrection as your only hope to be saved from the judgment that you deserve for your sin, if that's you this morning, then hear this. Yes, continue to grow in wisdom. Yes, continue to strive to live according to these five words of wisdom that we've seen this morning. But at the same time, also rest in the fact that Jesus has already lived them out for you, perfectly and completely, as your representative before God the Father. And as a result, the perfect life of wisdom that he lived is yours. And the perfect life of wisdom that he lived, if you're a Christian, has been credited to you, not because of your works, but by means of your union with Christ by faith. And so then, as you leave here this morning, leave here glorying in the perfect wisdom of Christ on your behalf. And let his perfect wisdom fuel and embolden you to continue to grow in your wisdom that we've seen in these five words of wisdom here in chapter 7 this morning. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your grace. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you that you have created us here in this world that's crooked, that's fallen, that's mysterious, that's perplexing, that's fleeting, that's hard to grasp and make sense of. And you didn't leave us here in the dark, but you left us here with wisdom. And a big chunk of that wisdom is found in the book of Ecclesiastes. And so as we strive to live a wise life in this fallen, broken world under the sun, Lord, help us to be encouraged and help us to appropriate the wisdom that we've seen in our passage here this morning. Not to earn your favor, but because we already have your favor, because of the perfect embodiment of wisdom that has been lived out in the person of Jesus Christ, that has been credited to us through our union with him. Help the reality of that cause us to rest, and also cause us to serve as fuel and motivate us in the strength that we need to grow in the wisdom that we've been exhorted to in our passage here this morning. It's in Jesus' name that we pray these things. Amen.